Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our slightly irregular Monday streams, question mark?
Yes, I think the streams happen when they happen and don't happen when they don't.
Yes.
And there is a multitude of reasons for why things happen and don't
happen.
What happen,
yes. But we really wanted to say that it's impossible to explain to people reality while it is apparently happening.
Yes, and I think as well, in a certain regard, even for our own sake, I think we could have made a good job of doing some timeline stuff last week that might have been handy for people. But fundamentally, on the rare occasion that we maybe talk about something that is more recent, it's best done when I think that at least enough of the arc is complete. And at the same time, had we tried to do what was our planned stream for last week on a more evergreen subject...
It would have been quite incomplete, yes.
Yes, and it would have been an interesting stream, I think.
All right.
Still need to get around to finishing some of the parts for that. But as you say, and the wash of happening energy...
Yes.
Sometimes it's not the most wise. I must also apologise in advance for sounding different if possible, for I am wearing glasses.
Yes, you have to speak up and wearing glasses.
Yes.
We'll get the preamble.
Pol Pot is no longer my favourite, third world dictator. Idi Amin's my favourite third world dictator now, because he had a 600 group.
Well, if you do want to support us, we do have the Ko-Fi. The link is the pinned one in chat. And we also have the Anti-Politics Substack, even though I've been a bit lax with updating that recently. I've had some trouble with getting the podcaster version to download and go up properly, so I'm going to do a little bit of a change there, but look out for it. I've got quite a few things in the works for the Substack, so paid members, thank you for your patience. We'll have quite a lot more stuff coming on tap there relatively soon, but yes, the we still have monetization from YouTube as well,
so
somehow,
yes, if you want to give a super chat or whatever, we will try our best to read it, or we will read your little message on the Ko-Fi post.
Yes, but
I think it's best suggesting that we have quite a dense... quite a dense agenda this evening.
We'll get to the preamble, though. Weather report.
Oh, yes.
It's been a weird one today, but the sunshine is currently, as the cartoon zebra of record would say, the racially coded cartoon zebra of record.
Oh, of course.
It is indeed crack-a-lackin' sunshine right now. It's crack-a-lackin' now. Thank you, Negrified Zebra.
Yes, I love the zebra that presents the MGM adverts.
Yes.
He's very funny. I don't get why he's black, though, because he's a zebra.
Well, people thought it was happening, guys, but it turns out it didn't actually happen.
Well, it was happening, and then it wasn't happening, and then it happened again, but except from it didn't happen that time, and something else happened, which really means it's all a wash, and nothing's actually happened.
I'd like to start with a small amount of smugness and say that less than a week, or a kind of weeks after, really, the bullet apparently passes millimetres from their candidate's skull. The American writer tweeting about Sunderland and, like, bins tipped over in Bury Town Centre feverishly.
Yeah.
Andy knows on the ground, guys, it'll be fine. It's really funny how this kind of bled over to become a bit of an international current thing for a moment, and displaced the other current thing we were told would never vanish from the headlines.
And which replaced that other current thing
that would never, that's changed politics forever, would never vanish from the headlines.
Given that previous paradigm shift before that as well.
Yes, there's a thing that happened that, of course, completely changed politics, completely changed civic society, and would never disappear from the headlines. it's the current thing always moves on. I know it doesn't feel like it will in the moment, but the current thing will always move on, and it tends to move on relatively rapidly. I'd like to frame this, though. It's very, very important to understand the underpinnings of all of this and where we're coming from. As a bit of a framing device, I actually have, as we're going on, a few Jonathan Bowden clips here, which will inform us as we go forward. But this is just a little clip where he talks about he talks about what liberal society can assimilate.
Because there's only two tendencies in modern British and other European and Western life that can't be integrated. They are foundational religiosity of one sort or another and the radical politics of identity. They're the only two things that can't be adapted and assimilated into the marketplace, into the 24-hour video Tesco shopping bay culture. If they are the only two things that can't be integrated.
Yes, apologies if that is a bit quiet, but if you turn bounding up too much, sometimes he just gets really crumbly.
It's boosted on the other end anyway. Hopefully it's not too loud for the people at home, actually.
No, but
I did boost that slightly.
It's I don't know, check the comments on the live stream. There aren't people going, no, my ears, Bowden, please stop.
No, I don't, it shouldn't be like that. It should be about the same level as our voices.
Yes. But as has been a fundamental dilemma in, I suppose, the organising of British society since at least the 70s, if not maybe a little bit further back, I have no words really to add. It's that simple.
It is.
Islamism as not an ideology, not as a simple worldview or just a simple religion, but Islamism as like a cultural imperial force, which it sort of has always been, cannot be integrated into a liberal society. What? It is completely absolute in all of its framings, and it doesn't... It's the immovable force and the unstoppable object or whatever other sort of... Similarly, your metaphor you would want to drag out for it. It just cannot happen. Civilization is incommunicable in this regard.
Yes, it is. But what Bowden is talking about there, and what we'll use as a bit of a framing going forward, is that this is a two-part operation, primarily against the quote-unquote radical right in Britain, but it also has a subsidiary tentacle, which is against Islamism in the UK. There is, as we'll go forward, a degree of equivocating going on here. There is some both-sidesism, and I believe that the security forces, security services, and those who set the narrative understand that there are always two news narratives when it comes to sensitive topics in the UK.
Yes,
they endeavour to control them both.
This is obviously points we will go over a bit further later on in more detail, but I just think as an element of framing, we have seen how woke was in the media positively.
Yes.
It then went into the media in a sort of neutral and farcical sense, and now we've almost come out the other end whereby it only exists in media to be mocked. There is a lot of talk about the idea that Western regimes are reorganising and resustaining themselves for some sort of war effort in the Middle East, presumably against Islamism or radical Islamism in some form.
Yes.
I don't then understand how people can say that that's the case, but not also see that what we are at is the sort of starting point of the framing around Islamism changing once again.
Yes. Well, first of all, really, we'll start with a timeline.
Yes.
And these be quite blank, quite stark. There is some production. We've put all the production values in the thumbnail and some of our lower third jokes there. But initially, we will be giving you just a very quick timeline of what happened here. I'll get them out. We've got the slop here too, the new slop as we'll bring up going forward. We've also got the Australian breakdancer, and we've got good old Hugh Jimmy Edwards there to bring us on home.
But yes, let's get an understanding of the events in sequence in a manner that makes sense.
Yes, what happens is that there is a stabbing in Southport. And an informational vacuum ensues. Nobody is named. No description is given. Images are deliberately suppressed. There's rumours and rumours about migrant backgrounds, about who this serial stabber is for this, frankly, horrific event.
And at the same time, there is a cohort of, shall we say, slop merchants.
Oh, yes.
Who went out of their way to post information that... No, I'm not suggesting they were deliberately misleading people, but did post information... It would make it seem as if this perpetrator was of one culture or one colour or of one name or of one locale. And as a consequence of this, especially when these events are so heated and there are such great tensions between communities, of course the government's going to come down and go, well, that's misinformation. I mean, we're going to talk about a certain character later on who spent quite a bit of time doing that himself and ended up under contempt of court charges for trying to report on these sort of events before information has been made official.
Yes. Well, what happens here, up until we get to the planned protests, in quotes, all of this exists in an informational vacuum. There's been no confirmation as to who the perpetrator is, and there is large-scale speculation about their background and also just initial anger about the event itself. Southport stabbing, what happened is three children killed at Taylor Swift party. What did happen, and we're not going to read over this, we're going to give you, you know what happened if you've been watching the headlines at all. That a 17-year-old, technically second-generation immigrant from Rwanda, who seemed to be somebody who was some 50 IQ weirdo, came out and stabbed a bunch of children, stabbed the teacher, just basically went on a rampage with a knife in a playground.
Oh, it's because he never got the possession as Doctor Who, but...
This is what happened. It turned out, in the end, not to have anything direct to do with Islam, in quotes, but the initial incident itself created this cascade effect due to the informational vacuum.
Well, yes, as a consequence of the vacuum, the presumption amongst some people was that this had something to do with Islam. This had something to do with a group that would be inconvenient in the government's narrative to have perpetrated this sort of act. And as a consequence of that, I think in some regards, you could almost suggest that the British state had kind of shot themselves in the foot. Because if they put information out beforehand and not let rumours spread, they might have actually not had what was the sort of outpouring of discontent that happened in Southport.
Well, what happened is there was some unfocused violence that took place, but as a result of a piece of agitation.
Mm.
What happened in Southport and what's been lost in the shuffle is that this man appears.
Yes, during the vigil on the night after the...
There was a stabbing for the vigils, and somebody who appears to be of Asian appearance, in quotes, is photographed being arrested by police. His name is not released.
No.
There's another informational vacuum that takes place. And so you end up with an outpouring, or apparent outpouring of anger. There's a lot of outside agitators already in Southport, a lot of fame seekers already there. And as we'll get into, the scale of these riots, as they're being called, is a lot lower than you'd be led to believe.
Yes, but we'll come to that in a moment, because what was at least shown to us was a strong attempt to make this event look big.
Yes.
Look like a happening, if you will, as something that should be highlighted because it's of importance and it was going to change things.
The violence happened in Southport because of rumours of a second knife man.
Mm.
Possibly of Asian descent, whilst there was this informational vacuum about who the actual stabber was.
Yes.
It was a compounding set of informational black holes. And out of that, there came more calls for protest. But there is something very interesting about this, in that nobody seems to quite know where these protests are being planned and who was planning them until they appeared in the headlines. This is the 3rd of August. This is 3 days after the events in Southport. There's been grumblings, there's been talkings of more violence. There's been small, isolated incidents of windows being smashed and small scuffles, but very small stuff has been going on, really, since this confusion riot, basically, in Southport due to an unseen agitator. Fast forward to August 1st, and we have this headline from Sky News. More than 30 protests planned for this weekend in Southport stabbing aftermath. Police chief to prompt a heavy presence across the country, which additional prosecutors say are on standby to charge people swiftly. The issue here is that the narrative, and they're right when they say this, is that the narrative on social media and the narrative coming out of the initial event have been crystallized into anti-Islamism protests.
Yes.
When the timing was based on an event that has to do with a second-generation immigrant
Lawrence
from
Fox
a completely different background.
All these other sort of anti-woke types all came out and bared their teeth and said, enough is enough. The enough is enough protests, as they then became self-titled, was essentially a media phenomenon crafted partly in one hand by the state's non-information, and also the open space given to counter-jihad people to come and say, well, let's have this as our narrative then.
What they mention here as well, as we'll get onto later, there's a few interlinked things here, though. The 100 arrests outside Downing Street, and 10 arrests, and you know, there was some violence in Sunderland. A police station was set on fire, in quotes. But that is not exactly what happened, as we'll get onto that. That incident is in the thumbnail, but you have these sporadic events, and you have this dragnet gathering of protests, dragnet arresting of protesters in central London that bumps up these numbers to make it look like something is happening. But what we found when we looked at where these protests were coming from, this list of protests Yeah, it is identified. Sky News has seen posts on social media promoting more events in cities across the UK over the coming days, including one targeting a mosque, whilst counter protests are also being planned in response to the far right demonstrators. It identified a total of 30 protests taking place today, 25 organized by far right activists and 5 dubbed anti-racist counter protests. Now, it's interesting because there were more counter protests planned and then they were scrubbed.
Yes.
And it seems that people were given deliberately room here to riot. There's a post on social media. This is the first list I could find of these 30 protests. These are the riots that everyone's reporting on. These are the incident scenes. This is the official list, basically. If you look at the ad afterwards, if you look at the post game, this is the official list of places there were a riot.
Yes,
and I think originally published by an anonymous account with no sourcing. I've never seen this anywhere else. It may have been spread on Telegram, but we get a lot of Telegram spam, and we're in certain channels where this stuff is spammed.
This was a different case, though.
Yes,
I think it's worth suggesting as a caveat that I would presume this list is scraped from private Facebook groups within which these events were organised by people who may or may have not been unscrupulous. We cannot discern that fact, but what we can discern is the major popularisation of these protests, particularly on the website, on Twitter, came from here. Was the source.
If you search for any of these protests, you can't find mention of them, though, in local groups.
No.
There is no grassroots mention of any of these protests I have been able to find. There's no groups who came forward to claim any of them.
No.
There's no banner under which they were organised, apart from mainstream media coverage and social media repetition. This has come directly, seemingly out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And as we all know, things like this don't simply come out of nowhere. The major node amplifying this list verbatim was Tommy Robinson.
Yep.
He is seemingly the sole source of this list in terms of popularization. But there was another source. Before, the only place I could find these protests listed, and this was the most damning part to me, was on the Stand Up to Racism website.
Where, if you actually try and name search some of these places and times, you will find that this is the only result, as if the counter-protesters at Stand Up to Racism knew where these protests were going to be before there was any publicly available information as to where they were going to happen.
You could say that they may have been monitoring these closed Facebook groups where these protests are organised, but there is no evidence of... There's a very, very simple question that is not being answered here. Who is organising these protests? Who?
Yeah.
Who is organising these? Where did this list come from that was amplified? And why was it picked up, shared, and spread by news media rather than being downplayed? If you don't want people to appear at a place and a time, do not amplify these claims.
Yes.
The informational vacuum led to people searching for where are the far-right protests going to be.
And then instead of then clamping it down,
yes,
there seems to be a sort of window of, say, 24 to 18 hours where people were basically free to share and engage with all of this stuff, and there was almost no opposition. And again, you had all these sort of figures around that satellite of kind of counter-jihad that were all posting essentially agitation and bait. Clips from years ago of young lads getting beaten up by Muslims, or screaming enough is enough and labelling these as the enough is enough protests, and we've got to make a stand, and all the usual crap. What we can identify here is that this framing of these events as they took place was all a media phenomenon. And the people who, one way or another, decided that they were going to attend or back these events really did possibly end up with quite a lot of egg on their face.
Well, I don't want to get too much into the background of this, but there was the Tommy Robinson protest.
July 27th.
Yes.
I believe.
He de facto became, and people in our... Well, this is what... It looks stupid now, and it would be uncontroversial to say all this now, but at the time there was a lot of... I put it up, the movement has begun.
Yeah.
It was being injected into our sphere by the usual suspects that now have a lot of egg on their face. Carl, to his credit, decided to tell people not to attend the protest at the weekend, but only after attending the prelude events. This was basically getting the idea out there. Liz Truss talking to people, telling people to go out in the streets and protest.
Matt Goodwin saying you've got to go out and protest against Hamas.
Yes, telling people to do these, what were effectively at the time, tacitly anti-Palestinian protests. Mm. But there was this idea of a national protest movement, of a right-wing nativist in certain ways, but very civic nationalist in most of the ways. And let's be fair, massive hidden hand of Zionism behind it. But there was this idea of a British protest movement. These seeds were planted in people's minds. And because of that, you had this priming effect where, you know, Tommy, who's had his successful Patriots rally, comes out and says, "Patriots, this is where we are gathering across the country."
Mm.
And then people go, "Tommy Robinson needs me." And really, that is what's happened.
Yeah.
The media narrative is correct because it's coming from somebody who possibly has handlers. We'll get into that. But all this depends on whether you believe that the British people genuinely can spontaneously rise up, and if you believe in Tommy Robinson as some form of honest actor or not.
Well, and part of the point as well is that, as we'll continue to cover in different details and specific protests, the extent to which this was a large event and there was protests up and down the country that were causing large amounts of damage isn't really necessarily true either.
No.
There was a large part of this essentially being overblown and agitated so that there was an evil far-right boogeyman that someone could then, in theory, respond to.
Again, the planned protests, who planned them, and why is the earliest evidence of many of these protests stand up to racism planning the counter-protest to it? I can't think of anything that's a more fitting example than the counter-protest for the supposed protest being organised before the protest.
Mm.
It's comical, but that is indeed where we are. It talks about, you know, 100 arrests.
I think that's a bit for a later section. I don't know if you want to do the...
Ah, yes.
Because we're still doing the timeline here.
We are, yes.
So I think what you actually want...
Yes. What I wanted to say quickly... Yeah, sorry about that. I've got that up here. Is that... This was blanket coverage. I've got one example here. I didn't want to exhaustively put these up, but everybody was splashing this 30 number. It was ubiquitous. It was drummed in sequence, in rhythm with people. But what you get after that is a vaunted, you know, the next weekend is supposed to be this vaunted extra wave.
This was the Wednesday following.
Yes.
Now, I can comment for an absolute fact that a similar list to that one that we just looked at there was passed about on Telegram from maybe about Sunday night, Monday morning onwards.
Yes.
That listed, I think, anywhere in the realm between 30 and 40 different locations for migrant legal centres, migrant support centres, and basically with lots of fire emojis around said, "We've got to go to action." And this was posted in right-wing groups that, let's be honest, you'd have to put your welding mask on to go and look at them.
Yes.
But that message was up in that group from Monday right through to Wednesday morning. And in that group alone, 15,000 people saw it. Now, maybe those view numbers aren't accurate, but there was obviously people seeing it, people sharing it, people talking about it in some regard. But did any of these things happen on Wednesday? No. There was absolutely almost no quote-unquote far-right presence whatsoever, because by this point, Tommy Robinson and his acolytes had pivoted after the disorder and the chaos of Saturday, had decided on the Wednesday that people shouldn't go to these events.
Yes.
And then what happened? As you say, and you've got here, power of the people, stand up to racism, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people marching up and down every end of Britain, because in a large number of towns and cities, where students and people who basically do feck all serious were told, don't come into work today or finish at lunch because there might be a riot on. So what happens? They step out of their office and somebody goes, "Here's your stand up to racism placard. Now march down to the fucking train station."
What you end up with, as I said, it was the only evidence I could find of many of these earlier protests was stand up to racism, trying to goad people into going to them. Now we have the other part of the operation, which is that the activist class is activated.
Mm.
You have Unison, the unions, you have the students, you have all of this permanent protest block that the state uses to manufacture consensus pouring out into the streets. And overnight you go from fear, 100 far-right protests planned, to it's over. The people have spoken, the power of the people has come, and these protests have been washed away, and nary a brick was thrown since.
Yes, so
these protests were agitated. They were ubiquitous, they were ubiquitously covered, and then overnight, they were declared over.
Yes.
They were gone.
So, To summarise, a media vacuum about a tragedy allowed the counter-jihad types to put in a narrative and furthermore add protest bait, essentially, onto people that they took up. This, in turn, allowed for the perfect opportunity, in some regards, whether you think the optics are clumsy or not, for the front page of every newspaper to have a picture of crowds holding Stand Up to Racism supply placards.
And it was Stand Up to Racism.
Yes.
It was, this was the trap springing. This is the other part of the operation. This is what we caught as it was going on. This is what happens. You end up with nothing but, and we'll get to that in a second, yeah, nothing but Islamist agitators at these earlier protests to make sure they have maximum media impact. And then when it comes to actually winding the operation up, it is done incredibly easily. It makes a mockery of this as a genuine process, in quotes.
It's amazing how heavily telegraphed events are ahead of time if you can just look at where information is coming from. The UK government can turn these mass NGO protests on and off like a tap. And people, I think, really need to take that fact
look
to
at
heart.
This is the Mirror, the Sun. This is the Independent, I believe. This
far right
is
BTF
the Daily old. Express, the Guardian, the Times.
But it's okay. Operation's over.
Yeah, and then the next day, what's the front page of the Sun? It's Katie Price getting a facelift. The emergency is declared over, and then everybody's front page of their website, all the newspapers are talking once again about Katie fucking Price. They're talking about Katie Price.
But let's...
and we've gone from, it's happening, the native British people are rising up, to the Sun not only moving past this, not only having the counter-protest narrative we just saw, but going to slop mode.
Yep.
They have refilled the slop trough, and you will eat from it as normal. And all those people who told you, it's happening, we have to support this, it's happening, white strikes, it's happening, are looking completely insane, because it's obvious now that it was not happening. But saying so at the time makes people almost bereft. It makes them aggrieved. They have to think it's happening. They have to, like, gee themselves up. They have to believe that the British people in some way are going to rise up. They have to buy into this. And that's why this media narrative was so effective. That's why so many people were duped by it. It's very obvious that unfocused violence doesn't have an impact when what you can do is you can at any time pull tens of thousands of people into the streets
a couple thousand.
Nationwide. I mean, this would you can. The Gaza protests especially have shown that the NGO network.
Oh, no, I'm just saying specifically for this event, even say if it was tens of thousands. I think much like the events of the weekend prior, there has been playing about with the idea of the scale.
Oh,
of
course, but they can drown it out. There is much more mass and scale in the activist class. What people did was they said, Britons are rising up. This is spontaneous. This is real. And the problem is that in any battle with the establishment about street numbers, they're going to win because they can just mobilize a whole class of people paid to be at protest. Mm. So civil disorder, in quotes, you know, people throwing bricks in the street is a non-starter anyway, because you'll have thousands of police and 30,000 counter-protesters in London. And, you know, 3,000 here, 1,000 there, 500 there. And you're talking about events, as we'll look at here, in terms of the riots, in quotes, that involved maybe 100 people in a single location was a lot. Put it that way.
Oh, yeah,
you might not even had them.
It's one of the ones up there.
No. I will quickly get to it. But this is an aerial photo of the Southport riot. This is the entire extent of that incident. There's the mosque there in the middle. There's the police vehicles. There's barriers. And this is everybody. This is journalists. This is Lucky Loos. This is
locals,
paid citizen journalists, in quotes. This is plainclothes police officers.
Counter-protesters.
That's everybody. That is the extent of one of, I guess now, the most infamous nights of violence in UK history with the siege of the mosque. That's it. It wasn't the entire town. These are incredibly isolated incidents. And what we have really is an example of hyper-reality. People do not live in reality. They live in hyper-reality. And because of that, they are able to be led by the nose. They are able to think that these things are happening when really what you have is happening at a single intersection of a street.
Yes.
There's a single crossroads here where it's happening. This is where all the photos were taken. This is where the burning police vehicle was. This is where the things thrown at the mosque were. You'll notice it's all different angles of one crossroads and effectively three streets.
Yeah.
And that is amplified and magnified and turned into some form of mass native uprising when what you have is a very, very small number of people in a very small... You can see there's the police line. There's the mosque in the background. It's extremely geographically small and numerically small what has been happening. And it's the same with, if you look at footage of all of these, all of the 30 vaunted, you know, protesting quotes, most of them people didn't show up.
No.
A lot of them, especially, there was a famous one in Birmingham, and there has been, we're not going to cover it here, but we will mention it in the Islamist angle, is that a lot of areas you had what looked like also bust-in Islamist agitators,
yep,
who are not your normal Antifa protesters. What happens is usually the NGOs send out people into the streets with their Stand Up to Racism banners and their socialist worker banners to drown out those people, to create a situation where those people can't operate, to create, yes, these peaceful counter-protests. But that wasn't done. Why wasn't it done? Why were these small-scale instances that the press was feverish for, that they were hyping up massively in advance, and then they got what they wanted? It's,
oh, yes,
very clear that they wanted this because they were slobbering over it before it happened, and they were zooming in on it. They were giving you 50 different angles on it. When these events happen, as we know from living in the north of England, there have been uncontrolled instances of ethnic violence over the past 20 years almost everywhere in the north of England, and they are generally hushed up. But
I was going to say, if we go back to the first, I think, BBC source you've got open there,
yes,
we can see that even the police, in some regard, were working towards blowing this issue up. So if we scroll down just a little bit here to, yes, the second paragraph, you know, you're talking about more than 100 arrests after Southport violence.
Yes.
They're making it sound as if this is contingent with the image we've just shown you.
Yes.
However, you read into it, you realise more than 100 people were arrested in central
London
because,
yes,
they were trespassing on Downing Street, because a lot of folk under Tommy Robinson's wing said, we're going to go there and have our own vigil. So then, because of the fact they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, they all got pinched, handed a caution,
yes,
and then the police get to go, 100 arrests. There must have been so much violence.
This is what created the 100 arrest number, this video. This is what they're doing, is they are calmly just leading people. Yeah, police heard on live stream saying, pick anyone out for arresting protests in central London. They were, as they can do, arresting people at an illegal protest, in quotes. It wasn't pre-planned. You do have to pre-plan protests in this country. It wasn't a pre-planned protest. It didn't have approval, and so they hoovered everybody up. They hoovered them up, and they used them to bolster the arrest numbers.
Yes.
And so you have headlines of 100 arrests after Southport violence, but the 100 arrests are taking place
in Westminster.
In Westminster, and they're taking away middle-class people and bystanders.
Mm.
And the hoovering up of bystanders to make up these arrest numbers is a common theme in all of what's going on here.
Because then we've got the Guardian's recap, yes, of the events after the Saturday.
Yes.
So this is from Friday last week.
Yes, this is from Friday the 9th of August.
More than 700 arrests made and 302 people charged over riots in England. 700 arrests! These protests, they must have been huge!
We had a protest this big! But what you, the migrant censor is the kind of the key event here. But again, you're not looking at hundreds or thousands of people. You're looking at maybe dozens of people at each site.
Mm.
And these, once you drill into these 700 arrests, you start to realize that a lot of these people, as we'll get into with the legal overreaction, were basically taken for a ride.
Yes.
They are people who were looky-loos. They are people who were bystanders. They are people who were unfortunate enough to be walking through a town centre with a bag of coke on them. There was a lot of frisking, stopping, and searching.
I think that's in the next link you've got.
It will be, yes, I'm just trying to get to...
You're too far.
Yes. Oh, no. Yeah, there, yeah. But what we also have here is standard.
The Coke Mall. Yeah. Ooh. So, yeah, you've gone and, what, scattered and put a dispersal order in a city centre on a summer evening where the weather's good, and you've picked up a dozen folk that have got, got an eighth ball of Coke on them or something.
Yes, if you lock down an area and you stop and search a bunch of people, you're going to find a few bags of Coke and a few people to arrest. This is how policing works. This is how massaging the stats works. This is how policing has worked post-Blair era targets.
Mm.
This is the new normal. But people don't understand where these numbers come from. They just see numbers. So you've seen, we've got people hoovered up for drugs, hoovered up for being bystanders, hoovered up simply to make up numbers in the case of that London protest.
But surely there must have been some considerable amount of, I don't know, property damage or fire or violence going on.
Well, the protest in Sunderland, which was the intermediate protest, it was the one between kind of the vigil and Saturday, this is on Friday, but car set on fire. How many cars? One car.
Just the one, please.
Car set on fire during riots in Sunderland. I've seen more raucous birthday parties.
Yes. Some rioters battled police.
Police
in the streets of the city centre following a planned demonstration linked to the Southport knife attack. Now, that's an interesting way of framing it, isn't it? Because if you were a complete normie and you read, some rioters battled police in the streets of city centre following a planned demonstration linked to the Southport knife attack, you'd think these protesters were in some way responsible for the Southport knife attack, wouldn't you?
Kind of.
There's a little bit of obfuscation going on there, but
well, anyway, there's
hundreds of people gathered in Keele Square, many of them draped in England flags during the evening. Videos posted on social media showed a fire at a police station, which was marked permanently closed on Google Maps and was no longer listed on a police station finder on Northumbria Police website, and hasn't been for about 2 or 3 years,
yeah,
at least.
They tipped over a car and burnt down an abandoned building. And that was the supposed revolution.
But it's civil war!
Civil war! Ooh, Elon Musk
get your beanies on, folks!
Get your beanies on. Elon Musk said civil war is inevitable.
Sorry, I've just noticed that extreme fear is driving the US market at the top. That's kind of funny.
Extreme. I do like the fear and greed markers there. But
yes, the slop merchants, Elon and his crowd, and Ian Chung Lee, and as he likes to call him, and the libs of TikTok and whoever else, have had a right fucking field day about this. Because, of course, we, as Brits, let's be honest, live in areas not too far from where some of this stuff happened over the last couple of weeks. We know that it was basically a wash.
Yes.
And that some of these events maybe had 100, 200 people either side, and within the space of an hour or so, the police put out a dispersal order and people were got rid of. And anyone that maybe threw a petrol bomb or threw a brick was pinched.
Yes.
However, the way this has all been framed, 700 arrests, 100 arrests after Southport knife, blah, 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 you know, just hitting people with it constantly. There is this, at least I can see presumption amongst sort of an American chattering class that this is Britain on the brink.
Yes,
it's over now.
Britain on the brink.
We are going to be a Muslim country next week. Mark their words.
Yes. Well, I'd say that we shouldn't mistake this, as you put here, we shouldn't be misheard or mistaken. The underlying tensions between native English and Muslim communities very clearly exist. Our identification of the manipulation and presentation of these tensions does in no way minimize them. As we've said, there are sporadic outbreaks of racial violence all the time in the Midlands, in Northern England, in London. In anywhere there are these mixed communities, there is constant racial tension and violence. What this narrative does is say that it only happens at specific times, or it only happens in specific places, where that isn't true. This is able to frame this as exceptional and as wrong. But it is unfortunately normal and ingrained in all of these communities.
And
they
are
a frozen conflict.
And I think one of the best examples of pointing out the way that it's been manipulated on, dare I say, both sides, is all this chatter about the EDL and the MDL. You know, sources that would generally report to leftists or the ethnic community made it seem as if the EDL, the Tommy Robinson's great foot soldiers from 2011, had arisen from the dead and were marching, you know, bound to come and attack mosques.
Does the English Defence League still exist, and could it be banned in the UK?
Meanwhile, at the same time, the sort of sources that would speak to Tommy Tards, as we might call them now,
yes,
was suggesting that gangs of organised Muslims were brandishing weapons under the title of the Muslim Defence League.
Well,
and it's all crap.
It is, yes.
And it seems, though, in some regards, that whereas they'll say that certain people agitated against this and certain people have been pinched online for social media posts, I don't see Turning Point UK getting pinched for coming up with this fabrication of the Muslim Defence League. A group, in my own research, I seem to have found absolutely no formal evidence for its establishment or existence outside of academic sources that I can't access.
It's the phantom, it's the boogeyman. Mm. It's the myth of spontaneous protest too.
Yes.
All of this is underwritten by liberal myth. You have this idea that these forces exist, these organized forces exist that are against liberalism, these far-right forces that simply are imaginary. In fact, they're so imaginary that it's incredulous to believe that they could arrange these protests. The idea that there is organization, people laugh at, and yet people seem to still believe in the idea that all of this was somehow spontaneous. And those who buy into the mainstream narrative believe that the EDL exists. And those who believe in the counter-narrative believe that this phantom Muslim Defence League exists.
I mean, I even had normie people in the pub on the Sunday that this article was out, when discussing it with them, claim to me that, well, of course the EDL isn't real. We disbanded our local branch 15 years ago, you know, or 10 years ago, however long it was.
Yes.
It is a fabrication, and if anything, the use of phrases like EDL and MDL should indicate to you that there's some state involvement going on here.
Yes, the invocation of them, and the lack of any real actors to point to,
yes,
outside of Tommy Robinson, who is a state actor, it should give you pause. It really should give you pause. I hope this is the right one. This is the right one. I'll quickly preface this. This is another quick clip of Jonathan Bowden, and this is him talking about Islamism. I think it's actually a rather good clip here.
Liberals are very afraid of Islam, militant Islam.
Yes, I know.
Are they right to be so?
Yes, they are, actually, because it's a sort of it's illiberalism as a religion. I'm slightly odd, of course, because I don't want the Islamification of Europe or of this country. But I admire Islam, and I'm known to be slightly dissentient on these things. They should exist in their part of the world, between Morocco and Indonesia. They have their part of the world. They basically have a sixth of the world. They should keep their block. They should keep the Amour. They should keep their potentiality. It's a different way of being human. Most Westerners can't even understand a metaphysical objectivism which is so absolute, and you surrender to the slavery of God's love as the basis of the system. Most Westerners can't even, you know, begin to understand what that's about, partly because they've drifted into such a degree of secularity, all religious ideas leave them slightly cold in present modernity, post-modernity. Islam is a very real threat to contemporary liberalism because they have misunderstood the nature of the multiculturalism they're trying to bring about. One, many of the people who are flooding into the West are less liberal than the people who are here already. Two, many of them don't like quite a bit of what they see in the West. And it's not that they feel sorry for us, they feel that we're a bit weak and hopeless and could be pushed aside. Islam's a very right-wing, if you want to use that conception, sort of system of the world. That's why extremist Catholics converted to it after Vatican II. Some fascists and National Socialists converted to it as well. Because it's total and absolute. It's not our way. Mm. Our civilization's based upon, in my review, a reverse principle of open-mindedness and reflexiveness and the evidentialism of which Lady Renouf speaks and the Socratic tradition. I see Western civilization as primarily, but not exclusively, Greco-Roman, but to me, primarily in the discourse it uses to think about itself. We begin with the view that there are certain absolutes and certain truths, but we are slightly less certain of what they are, and we wish to test them through life, struggle, evidence, and so forth. That doesn't mean that there are no truths. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that stand outside life. What's happened is that we've become confused about our own ideas as a civilization, and that's made us autumnal. We're now in danger from other groups because we're hesitant and have lost the convictions which the West has been traditionally based upon.
But yes, as emphasised there, and as also mentioned in the previous clip that we had up before, it is a fundamental and existential crisis for liberal regimes to have popular sentiments floating around under the doctrines of absolutist Islamism or of ethnic sort of lines of nationalism, because these things cannot be mediated, they cannot be moderated, they cannot be argued with. You either destroy them or they destroy you. Yes. I think we could say that maybe the only way the liberal regime, and especially the managerial regime as it stands today, keeps these groups in tow is by pitting them against each other.
Yes.
And actually manipulating a multicultural conflict or a multi-ethnic conflict from both ends for their own purposes, whilst using each group to knock seven shades of shit at each other.
This is also, I believe, a secondary intelligence agency operation against Islamism. There has been a lot of agitation here. There's even been, as we'll get to, some equivocating on it. The primary narrative is based against the quote-unquote radical right, but we do have here this idea that, as Bowden said at the beginning, as we had that clip, any form of metaphysical absolutism, i.e. Islamism or tightly held religious belief, and identitarian politics, i.e. the radical right, are the two things that liberal society and the liberal system cannot absorb them.
Yes.
They can never fully absorb them.
Well, this is why actually, to some extent, they never come out and call Islam left-wing, or they never come out and call Islam right-wing.
Yes.
Because they understand, at least even in their own sort of narrative version of it, they can't pigeonhole it like that because it doesn't fit into their view. It sits over and above it as a completely separate thing. But yes, there is even more evidence to suggest that
I was going to say as well that this is also added to the myth of... I'll go into this a bit later, but added to the myth of the organized right, in quotes.
Mm.
It's created this narrative. But the big question is, why was this amplified and sensationalized and not downplayed in a way that they looked hungry for it? The question is not if they wanted this, but why did they want this to happen? It's very clear that they could have put this away at any moment. The idea that Keir Starmer ever lost control of the streets, in quotes, is absurd. They were entirely in control of the discussion. They're entirely in control of the propaganda. They were entirely in control of events throughout all of this, as proved by how they were able to declare it as over with a mass show of simple human mass.
Mm.
The big question, though, is like, was there a plea? What is the response to this? That the regime has infinite time, really, to retcon this, to pull it to their advantage. Why did this happen? And what has it created the excuse for? What has it allowed narratively to happen now that they've got everything they wanted? And if you don't believe us, go through all the stuff we talked about, the Big Brother Watch stuff, War on Terror comes home,
yes.
All of our investigations into containment, all of them show you. And obviously all of our investigations into police bills and policing bills and new police powers that we've done, they all show that what they want is unfocused violence.
Mm.
It is random offences. It is things that does not affect them organisationally, but allows them a narrative space, allows them a way to justify arresting people.
Yes,
because
when you are a unassorted and unorganised group of people on the street, you know, smashing things down and trying to assault the police, you are not having a blow at the regime. You are just breaking your own knuckles.
Yes.
There is no direction to it. It goes nowhere. And they fundamentally understand this. That's why sometimes they even go to the extent of making themselves look stupid. You know, Keir Starmer does the whole, we don't think we have enough police to sort this because the big bad boogeyman of the far right is going to totally smash us all. And I have to think that to some extent, there are people out there gullible enough to be fooled into thinking that maybe now is the time to act because that sort of statement is put out there.
Well, one of the other things that was announced almost right away was the expanding of facial ID. This has now become uncontroversial policy, apparently, in England, that we now have police face recognition as a matter of course. This has been the bridging event. It was controversial and not widespread beforehand. It is now widespread because of the far-right riots, in quotes. This is the perfect pretense for facial recognition. If they are public events, it is public disorder, which is highly unpopular, as we'll get to.
It's almost as if the public order bill that was, you know, recently brought into law last year might be the perfect little sort of puzzle piece to make this kind of all fit together and work for them.
It talks about the riots here, Burn Bristol, blah, blah, blah. How is facial recognition already used by police? And this is about online riots groups. But really what they said was they didn't give much information about how it would be used. They simply came out and said, we'll use it. This is becoming ubiquitous. It's becoming universal. There's another article here from The Guardian, which I got up first. Video doorbell, CCTV, facial recognition, how the police track UK rioters. And they're essentially celebrating this. They're celebrating this as functional bureaucracy. They're celebrating the victory here, really, of the security state and the justifying of many of its powers. Here we have Keir Starmer. I don't think people realise how this looks to Middle England, because they live in their little online right bubble. This actually played as a Law and Order narrative rather well. Again, I'll talk about that a bit later, about how this looks to people who don't exist in your informational bubble, because that is one of the key pieces why people got so emotionally attached to it happening, because they were living in a feedback loop. They were living in an echo chamber. They were living in a bubble.
And I think another important detail to mention as well, specifically on the subject of spooks, was the involvement of a certain group.
Well, I'll quickly, a little bit here, I wanted to, a little bit about the facial recognition stuff. Then there was facial recognition. BJ Harrington, the National Police Chiefs Council lead for public order, said that officers were using facial recognition software on the footage gathered, and the technology could identify people with masks. Pete Fussey, professor of sociology at the University of Essex, who conducted an independent review of the Met's facial recognition capabilities in 2019, said most forces use the NEC facial recognition tool, but it was not foolproof. They're really talking about the technological, not the moral challenges here. Mm. There's just a simple thing here that it will be used.
There is no conversation about whether or not this will be used anymore.
It simply will be used. And this, there was a newspaper headline here. Sorry, I was going to actually find the right one for once. This is from, I believe, The Mirror. Is it? The Express, sorry. This is from The Express. Secret agents hunting down far-right rioters. Home Secretary vows to lock up violent thugs as PM holds emergency crisis meeting.
But yes.
So there's the slug here, which it's a little bit blurry, but this is from a national newspaper.
Yeah, the country's most secretive military unit has been called in to help security services as a sickening wave of violence swept across Britain in the wake of the horror attack in Southport. The Defence Human Intelligence Unit will provide MI5 with vital information by infiltrating far-right groups believed to be behind much of the rioting since three girls were murdered at a Taylor Swift-themed dance class last Monday. Home Secretary Yvette Cooper is also preparing plans to call on the army if riots continues to hit the country and leave police forces overwhelmed. Now, if you are someone who has watched a good bit of our stuff before, particularly our stream with Samuel Gog on You Are Not Paranoid Enough, I believe the title was.
Yes.
The DHIU, or Defence Human Intelligence Unit, is a basically one-to-one replacement for what used to be called the Special Demonstration Squad, which was an elite unit of technically Met Police, however operated specifically under the behest of the Home Office, and essentially got to infiltrate political movements, protest movements, any form of organisation that could be deemed a threat to public order or public safety, and act within them in a way that basically meant they had no accountability.
They are also empowered to operate domestically by the Covert Human Intelligence Resources Act.
Well, I was going to say, this group soon became defunct, when I think there was basically so much murmuring about how certain members of the Special Demonstration Squad had essentially committed quite heavy injustices upon otherwise innocent people, and now because of the way that they were wrapped up in the Home Office, their identities cannot be released.
Yes.
They cannot, you know, it's basically denoted.
If you want to recap, though, the Special Demonstration Squad was sent in to effectively destroy both the leftist and climate protest movements
and also the National Front and the BNP.
Yes, if you let me finish, and destroy them and wear their skin. The whole point really is that these protest movements as a genuine thing were killed in the 90s by the Special Demonstration Squad and were picked up again. And that's what they do. They go in, they take over movements, they remove them, and the ones that are politically expedient, they end up, you know, the government ends up setting up alternative tents for it, let's say. And that's how they work. But there was, and provably was, as we keep trying to tell people, a unit in the 1970s through to the 1990s, through into the 2000s, that was specifically infiltrating protest movements. And it was doing so not under the remit of the police, but under the direct remit of the Home Office, i.e. MI5. It seems that whoever the... I'll read it here. Whoever the, what are they called again? The Defense Human Intelligence Unit are doing much the same job, but they're meant to be military intelligence that's used in the War on Terror. This is another element of the War on Terror coming home.
Mm.
These are units that are supposed to be used in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, as it says here, and they are being used on Britain's streets. They are tacitly admitting that they have agitators and infiltrators in all of these protests. And really, you could see this as an admission that they have very high levels of control and infiltration already in these groups.
Mm.
And it adds further to the, you know, to the case that these are not genuine. These are agitated, that these are wanted, that these are led by handlers.
Yes.
And we all know any quote-unquote right-wing outfit that talks anything, any game about street violence immediately finds themselves swarmed with undercover police.
Yes, and I think there's one last point to mention on these people specifically. This is a, as we have said, a one-to-one replacement of the Special Demonstration Squad, which has been empowered by the Covert Human Intelligence Sources
Resources Act, yes.
Which is one of the first, I think, proper streams ever done on this channel at one point. People want to go all the way back to that.
It's policing. It basically just means that...
civil servant, I believe it is.
Yes, can commit a crime in the service of gathering any information about how minor, and they never amended that, and they never watered that down. But really what it means is that what would be foreign intelligence units, what would be units used against, again, like in the War on Terror, have now been used directly against the British population. And they're not only announcing it, they're proud of it. They're proud of this. That's what this, again, Express, secret agents hunt down far-right rioters. Highly skilled military units have been called in to assist MI5 and the police in the hunt for far-right riot organizations, sources have revealed. And this is just meant to spread fear. It's meant to be a gloat, really. It's meant to say, look, we lead you. We have people everywhere. You are being spied upon as an enemy population. And this is how an enemy population is treated. And the idea that, again, that this is all genuine is, I think, quite dangerous and faulty thinking. But we got on to really now what is the other tentpole of this, which is the legal overreaction. None of this, like I said, none of this is new. We've had this before, but I also believe there has been a degree of deliberate agitation here. I'll play you another quick video clip here. This is from Lord Walney, who is, he's not a nobody. He is the government's advisor on political violence and disruption. He's a crossbench peer. He's a lord. This is the lord of the realm speaking to you here. But let's listen to what he has to say, shall we?
I think the government, the new ministers in office, will understand that the British public will back them in whatever measures they feel is necessary to get this situation under control. Hopefully, we can see this petering out now over the next few days, and the extra effort which is being and focus which is being put on forces being able to have effect. But if that isn't the case, I think the British public will back further action from ministers in this emergency to get things under control. I think we should cast our mind back to the days of the days of COVID, where actually the public accepted an emergency situation during COVID and were prepared to back and lawmakers were prepared to support the kind of temporary measures to ensure that basically rioters were not able to claim. Back in COVID, they were prepared to back measures that were needed in that situation. I think they would take a similar approach to keeping rioters off the streets now, given the scale of damage which has been done to communities.
What he was saying there, though, and again, not nobody, was that the British population is incredibly malleable. That because of what happened during lockdown, they are able to be very easily told to stay in their homes.
Yes.
And really, if this ever did get out of hand, if this was a genuine, you know, wildfire event where you have uncontrolled street violence, you could quite simply have orders where people can no longer leave their homes.
Yep.
And people are primed to not only agree with those, but celebrate them.
And there is already a precedent and law that doing such a thing is already legitimate anyway.
Yes. Would you like to read the Super Chats, though? We do have a few donations that are built up, so thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I can do. We've got Coney Current Year, he's Chuck as a Fiver, saying, "Nothing ever happens, a very liberating realisation. I paid much more attention to my personal life, not constantly following political events. Good on you. I recommend everyone else basically does the same."
Yes.
Louis Shaw Morphe is giving us £2. He's asking, "How do you destroy the hyper-rally? See the message above." And he's got another message. "Multiculture to create global empire. Same OS, different time." I think I've got a rough idea of what you're suggesting.
Yes, yes, yes. But thank you. And like I said, you can donate by the Ko-Fi or via YouTube, because we are still monetized somehow. But what we get into now is, well, the legal humiliation, the ritual humiliation. First point, judge warns people observing or participating in disorder will be refused bail. A police officer told the court the police have been dealing with serious ongoing public disorder in Belfast in recent days. A judge in Belfast has warned those caught observing or taking part in public disorder they'll refuse bail. Four men apprehended in court charged in relation to recent riots in the city. There's another, I'll see if I can find the quote here. I couldn't actually find the article this came from. It may have been edited, but there's somebody here who has been, well, effectively railroaded by all this, because somebody has been simply observing the riots, or a few people actually seem to have been observing the riots. And, well, here we are. I believe this was from The Independent at some point, but I think the article was edited and I can only find the quote. But when hearing the case of 18-year-old Cameron Armstrong of Lewis Gardens, who was charged with rioting, the police told the court footage had captured of a male heavily involved in the riot. They believed Mr. Armstrong's clothes matched those of the male in their footage. His legal team told court he had just turned 18 and was there to have a look at what was occurring. They added that he had been encouraged by his sister to stay away, stay home, and when he saw the situation deteriorate, he decided to leave. Objecting to bail, police said the United Kingdom had experienced public disorder with racial undertones and set out that more disorder is likely in the coming days. As bail was refused, District Judge Rafferty said anybody involving themselves as a participant or curious observer, except for exceptional circumstances, would be remanded in
return to your homes, people. Nothing is happening.
Yes, but that is the weight of what is going on here. We also have here, boy 12 becomes youngest to be convicted over Southport.
Almost 1,000 arrests.
And 550. You see, the numbers just keep going up and up and up and up. Again, you have the same picture of the same intersection they are zooming in on.
Yep.
There is not much going on for them to show photographs of. That's why you see all the same photographs in all the press from all the same locations, because there was not widespread violence in the UK. You repeat after me. There was not widespread violence in the UK. There was isolated violence fostered by the security services and zoomed in on by the press. And I defy you to find me evidence of anything else, because it does not exist.
No.
There were not pitched street battles. There were not tens of thousands of people in the streets. There were not areas taken over for hours, even hours at a time. Nothing happened.
No.
Woman bailed after arrest over false online post about Southport suspect. A lot of the arrests that they're vaunting are social media arrests.
Yes.
A lot of these 1,000 people are quote-unquote armchair rioters. Men jailed for encouraging unrest on social media. There's a woman here, I believe, there's a few of them. There's a 55-year-old, a 41-year-old, and a 26-year-old who were all arrested for spreading the fake name of the perpetrator on social media that was supposed to be the event that started the riot. Of course, false information is going to spread in an informational vacuum. This seems deliberate.
Yes. And as you've got as a sort of summary for this section of stuff here, yes, the UK courts will simply arrest you and refuse you bail if you're simply milling around watching an anti-immigration protest. This is why we've been so solid on not going near them. Never. Just is not worth it.
Never go to protests, ever.
In London, especially, as we showed earlier on, they were just hoovering up passerbys at the protest that they shut down outside Downing Street so they could get their 100 arrested headlines. The state does what it pleases. I hope that people are realising that the law will not save them, nor can equality under the law that has ever existed in practice. The law must serve the interests of the state, and it's clear now that what the current elite think is in their interest is the suppression of the native British population. We saw this with the Stop the Boat protests, seemingly out of nowhere, that put focus on a tiny percentage of migrants that the Tory government already wanted to focus on anyway. And I want to say as an aside point, because it was something that became sort of conversation in pub the other week, was that, oh, you know, isn't it such a shame that some of these young lads that were at these protests and didn't really know what they're doing got 3 and 4 year sentences. People need to recognise that it's not about locking these people up and keeping them in prison for 3 or 4 years. I actually don't think they garner much out of that other than demoralising people. In some regard, it's about putting young people who are vulnerable, and in some way, maybe even without their knowledge, connected to people who might potentially organise events, and saying to them, well, what would you rather do? 4 years in prison, or would you like to tell us what your mate Davey's going to do next time an attack like this happens?
Every arrest, a potential informant, you know.
Every protest, an operation.
Every protest, an operation, yes. You must understand that this creates, for the security state, a massive web of potential informers. Why would they want widespread, low-level, unfocused violence? Well, first of all, it wasn't widespread, but it was localized and it wasn't focused. But the reason they would want that is this. It's to create all of this. It's to create the illusion of the organized right, in quotes. It's to create a network of informants if anything should ever happen. It serves so many purposes that I'm almost incredulous. Why wouldn't they want this to happen?
Exactly.
This is exactly what they have predicted. It fulfills every prediction. It is covered in such a way as to tick every box. It is a security state far-right bingo. And it allows headlines like this. Violent South Park protests reveal organised tactics of far-right. Where is this organised far-right? Who are these people apart from Tommy Robinson? Where are they? Who are they? There's vague mentions in one of the other articles of Patriotic Alternative, but even they seem to have disappeared into the woodwork.
And I don't
narratively.
And I don't think to any great extent they had any sort of purpose actually within this, because they've been running around talking about Sam Melia and his charges for the most part anyway, and trying to latch onto the two-tier policing thing, which we'll address a little bit further on, but we know to be a fucking joke.
Well, okay. What started as a stabbing by a settled Rwandan was turned into a counter-jihad talking point, which becomes self-undermining. It makes these people look silly, first of all. But Tommy Robinson is clearly meant to discredit any action on immigration whilst lashing the British right, the Israeli nationalist cause. We have shown you that really nowhere else was this boosted on the quote-unquote far-right side in terms of the protest locations, apart from one Tommy Robinson.
And you will find it, of course, interesting as well that there's a lot of people sharing an article around, I think it's either a BBC or maybe it's just a general press line one anyway, about how MI5 and MI6 are going to look at Tommy Robinson's possible links to Russia.
Yes.
Can they not read the Times of Israel? I can. I must be an intelligence operator. Because I could tell you where a large amount of his money comes from, and it is associated with a foreign intelligence operation, but it's not a Russian one.
I've got copyright struck for it before, so I can't play it. But just look, and the video of Tommy Robinson's like Passover message, where he's actually just crying for his love of Israel. But why is the US pro-Israel groups boosting a far-right anti-Muslim UK extremist in 2019? The Gateson Institute publishes pieces defending Tommy Robinson, and the Middle East Forum is offering him financial help, ostensibly in the name of free speech.
Free speech!
Well, they talk about the fact that really it's the part of the containment network.
Yep.
He's just getting the Zionist neocon money. And what this reveals to us is that between, you know, the Keir Starmers and the Tommy Robinsons of this world, it is a reflection of an internal disagreement within the elite. These people both have certain degrees of elite backing, but it is a fight between an internationalist and a Zionist faction.
Yep.
That is what is going on here. And we are seeing the backwash of it, and we are seeing the British people subjected to much larger security operations, with something like facial recognition becoming uncontroversial overnight because of this.
Yeah.
It's, you know, both sides get crushed. You end up with a counter-narrative focusing exclusively on Islamism from the likes of the anti, you know, the anti-jihad civic nationalists. The Douglas Murrays of this world have reappeared as supposedly, well, British heroes.
I think, as I suggested the other week when we were spitballing about some of this, I shan't sing because I can't sing anyway, but I think I can explain this whole phenomena and through the lyrics and the method of song. Muslims to the left of me, Nazis to the right.
Yeah.
Here I am, stuck in the middle with Jews.
But of course, we do love the nation.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But here's Tommy this year again, August 6th, being interviewed by his disgraced former spokesperson, in quotes. We've talked about Avi Yemeni before, but I think he's just one of, let's say, one of the best visual examples.
Oh, my items are bouncing around the room.
Western Wall, Old City Jerusalem. I believe this was captioned, "Praying for my haters." Welcome to your British far-right nationalist movement. Welcome to the former spokesperson of the man who is supposedly the main node for the list of your far-right riots.
Oh yeah, you can only truly be a heart-to-heart, you know, God-fearing Jew by beating Australian women.
There is also a degree of equivocation going on here. There's an interesting BBC article simply entitled "Starmer Will Be Judged on How He Tackles the Root Causes of Riots," which seems to be somewhat counter to what's going on. But there's a line in here I wanted to talk about, where he says that they, yeah, again, this is great. This is all just narrative fuel. It's latching on to everything talk about here. Rapid and well-publicized court action by the courts was key in bringing the unrest to an end, he said. And this time, ministers have emphasized strong policing and swift prosecution to deter others from joining the violence. How best to get the message across to the public has been a regular discussion at the emergency COBRA meetings. Just as government scientists were front and center in the pandemic, police chiefs and prosecutors have been wheeled out to land core messages with authority in this crisis. Where's the bit about that? Yes, I'm told the reason, yes. Yet the Prime Minister and his aides have pointedly avoided answering questions about the underlying cause of riots. I'm told the reason for this messaging discipline is a concern that discussing causes might be misinterpreted as suggesting some of the unrest was justified. I know it infuriates you, but this is extremely good tactical discipline. They will talk about immigration when it's time to talk about immigration. They are not sullying the issues in here. They are talking about public order and violence. And when it comes to Middle England, violence is very unpopular.
Coney, Current News, chucked another fiver there. What's your take on Cummings, technocratic objections about the state of Britain? I have to admit, I've not listened to anything Dominic Cummings has said in quite a long time.
Well, this has all happened before as well. Many of these communities, as I've mentioned, have frozen ethnic conflicts.
I think that was possibly one of the best examples of the bubble-like thinking around all of these quote-unquote happenings.
Yes.
Was that this was some unique event that was unprecedented in history, and that, you know, there hadn't been a precedent for multiracial street violence on Britain's streets for decades before this, and even specifically on the subject of Islam as well.
There have been, most notably in 2001, there was some in 2011 at some point, I believe, as well. But we have had low-level sectarian violence, street violence, to do with multiculturalism in this country continuously since the early 2000s. This happened in Burnley and Bradford. There was an explosion of violence in 2001 when a bunch of Muslims tried to burn down a pub with people in it. That is just what happened. Things that you would consider as apex happenings, things that you would be are much larger than what happened recently, happened in the early 2000s in Britain almost constantly. And no one seems to remember it. The Burnley riots, the Bradford riots, all of these happened at a much larger scale than we're seeing currently. These were genuinely like large community clashes that went on for days. And there was a period of 10 years, because I know people from there, where Burnley, Nelson, all those places that have extremely dense Islamic populations did have like a campaign to try and shut down all the pubs by burning them down. People were beaten up at night as they came out of the pubs, and that went on for years. But it was not reported on because it was not part of the narrative. It becoming the narrative should show us this is wanted.
Well, I think in some regard as well, specifically between what happened there and what happened now, is that there was not the very well-crafted information weapon we might consider calling Twitter and Facebook.
No.
That was so prevalent in our day-to-day lives now. I don't think you could even make those events back there look as big mentally to people as they think these ones have been, without the current technology and the techniques that are used to do so.
Yes, it's very easy to bring this into people's field of vision and very, very, very easy to remove it from it. Because this is all experienced as news narrative. Most people did not witness these riots themselves. Most people did not witness the event themselves. It was a media event for them. Because it was a media event for them, it is simply reality once again. And as you said, there is no such thing as spontaneous protest. I'll have a quick unfortunately our last little interlude here from Jonathan Bowden, but this is what he has to say about the British spirit when it comes to protest. This is what he has to say about the temerity of the British people, and really that it takes a lot to make the British people protest in any way, really. The idea that this was a spontaneous event, I just can't brook that this was a genuine outpouring that people did spontaneously take to the streets. Just like the counter-protesters very obviously didn't spontaneously take to the streets. There is no such thing as spontaneous protest. But anyway, we'll hear from Mr. Bowden here.
To such a degree that large parts of the intermediate social structure, such as the family and so on, will have completely collapsed, and there'll be total and utter atomisation, and individuals will sort of be alone and bereft. I don't think they can go much further. I think the liberal curve has stopped and is negotiating its recession. But the point is, can other forces emerge to push it back further so that everyone's managing their own decline? I think liberalism's beginning to manage the nature of its own decline. As we speak, the point is what replaces it, and deep down that's a matter in many ways of courage. A lot of the problems that face us are ethical, really. Do people have the courage to do things? Can they step out of their own lives? You see, in the past, British people have been very heroic when their establishments ordered them to be. They find it very difficult to self-start. They find it very difficult to stand out. They find it very difficult to stand alone, particularly when they've caught social disapproval or cultural disapproval or ideological disapproval. There seems to be a great individual heroism in our group, but there seems to be an element of moral timidity and extreme conservatism and conformity. And people are traumatised by liberal ideas and feel they can't stand against them. That's what political correctness is. It's just a grammar that polices people in their own mind. And most people can't get out of that. And until you break that down, other forces won't emerge. You know, many people would like to vote for the far right, but are frightened even of voting for it. They fear that in some way they're sullied, or someone will come for them, or they'll lose their job, or people they know won't like them, and so on.
I think that's a very good perspective, though.
Because yes.
It is very evident that this is not something that happens. Britain is not a powder keg about to erupt into street violence, as many people would have you believe.
I think as well, in a very specific respect, to the point that you're making about the view that one might have this from Little England, if you lived in Bath or Cheshire or something like that, and you've seen all the events unfold over the media, you would think that this is an issue about policing and public order and about law and order and about maintaining our stiff upper lip. Because as Bowden mentions there, at least in not so many words, that the British psyche, even when I think it's justifiable, cannot stand to see public disorder, and especially public disorder that is sustained.
Yes.
It is not us, and it is not how we function. We pride ourselves still, no matter how bad Britain is, on the relative safety of our streets compared to the rest of the world.
Yes.
And that becomes the issue at hand. Not the fact that some second-generation Rwandan who cannot be integrated into British society decided to murder three girls. And the fact that a decades and decades-long policy of bringing people into this country who fundamentally cannot live here and be a part of what we are has not worked and has led to these events happening. But as we always know, the discussion never gets there because it has been controlled and it has been framed at every angle.
Well, I've just got our kind of hyper-realized conclusions here. The security state has survived these riots undamaged, with narrative justification for action against the native UK population.
Tommy Robinson and the counter-jihad movement have successfully hijacked a watershed moment surrounding second-generation immigrant violence and supposedly, quote-unquote, integrated communities.
The UK government does not actually care about Muslims and uses them cynically as a client group. They are subjected to many of the same security services agitations and practices as the far right. That does not mean they should be here.
Yes. Unfocused disorder from a non-client group without any goal is exactly what the UK security services feed on. Visible protest groups are heavily infiltrated as a matter of course, and often steered by the security service themselves, the SDS and the new replacement military intel unit, DHIU. Temporary low-level disorder does not weaken the UK government, it empowers it. And I want to read a little snippet from the bottom end of A's Substack that he put out the other day on this. it's just right in the bottom paragraph. Right, there we are. When you're the government, you have many outs, because in a sense, you have a monopoly on response and are the only actual actor in the room. When the people act, or even when this or that minority community act, it is not really political action, it is only ever an event. A bit like a bridge collapsing or a river flooding. The agency remains and only ever remains in the hands of those with power. And this is the fundamental point. I mean, this is the same argument I had with people yonks ago about free speech. That free speech and speech in general is useless. It's not action. It's only when it's behind a minority of people who are organised with an express and extent purpose that speech can really become sort of political communication that is actually effective, or expression, as you might want to call it.
Yes. Well, as I've kept saying, as I've kept hammering home, street violence in the UK is incredibly unpopular and scary to most of the native population. And that's why so much spin has been applied to the Black Lives Matter movement. It is the framing of events where the power of the elite lies. We are not saying that they have 4D chess powers. They're able to manipulate events directly. They have a very low control directly of events. They have a massive high degree of control of the narrative surrounding events and the responses to them by government forces. And they also have a huge security state which infiltrates and steers all of these actors on all quote-unquote sides. This is very provable. This is not paranoia. We can show you this. We've been showing you this for years. It's some of our main bread and butter content. The describing of reality and the size of the security state. Two-tier policing plays into the myths of neutral civil rights. As you said, the police must serve a particular group.
So the police must serve some groups at the expense of others, just as they police some groups differently than others. We even identified this on our policing stream in numerous examples. I mean, I think one of the best ones was they essentially suggested that, well, no, we can't police white people and black people in the same way because of this woke reason. So they used woke ideology to justify the notion that racially white people and black people are different and ergo cannot be policed by the same measures. This is the same for the Muslim community, it's the same for white collar crime, it's the same for blue collar crime. There is as many tiers of policing as there is crimes.
Yes.
And this notion that you are going to be saved by a quality of the law by screaming two-tier keir is a load of fucking nonsense. And it is once again that return to the liberal myths.
Yes.
That people so desperately cling on to explain why it is that reality is so horrible.
The populist sentiment of a moment as well can be written out of history, and it will be written out of history. The civil rights era proves that. The regime has unlimited time to write the history of these events. And this is the narrative, that Keir Starmer is a stabilising hand. He used experience from the London riots to quell these riots. Did it expertly. He partnered with the heroes of the left-wing NGOs, who took to the streets and drowned out the racists. But the, you know, there are these underlying causes, these Islamist illiberal forces that will have to be tackled. And what you're not seeing is what comes 6 months down the line, when the new security framework is unveiled, and when there is this pincer movement that squishes the two edges, really, of British society that the state can absorb.
Together.
Being, yes, being the native right and being Islamism.
Yes.
Being two forces that will not simply roll over and believe in nothing.
No. And I see this. I still am maybe not the most convinced on the aspect that we are definitely going to war with boots on the ground in the Middle East. For me, to some extent, the jury is still somewhat out on that. But even if that is what is going to happen, I do not see how these events have unfolded, and even more so the way that they have been framed, is contradictory to that grand strategy that the permanent security state and civil service in some way holds to.
But there have been race riots. But how did the government get the population to agree to lockdown if there were race riots?
But I see these things as entirely coherent. I see there was a discordance between this, because it becomes very obvious. Well, we must fight against the people who hold the liberal values both in Britain and at home, whether they're Islamists or they're the far right.
Yes, at home and abroad, the enemies of liberalism must be defeated.
Yes.
And that will always be the narrative. And it doesn't have to make sense, because they are in power and you are not. And people don't see the news cycle as contiguous reality. They see it as fictional hyper-reality. And so they don't have a long memory with it. And we've described this fact in torturous detail sometimes, over and over and over again, that there is this process of political amnesia. And in 6 months' time, you'll have forgotten that this event happened. You'll have gone from thinking that Britain was on the brink of white revolution to forgetting it happened embarrassingly.
Yeah.
And that process happens very quickly, and it always happens. And pointing that out to people in the moment makes them angry with you. It makes them spit. It makes them cry. It makes them mauled. They become very unhappy when you tell them that it is not, in fact, happening, and that, no, people do not actually spontaneously take to the streets.
Yes, I mean, and again, I want to put out the caveat that do not think that we don't want Baz to go out there and essentially get his pound of flesh.
Yeah.
Boy, I like the idea of that, but let's be honest, Baz going out there and personally getting his little pound of flesh does not make a movement. It is not a fundamental opposition to the factions that run the meaningful and powerful parts of the British state. That is something entirely different. And if you can't engage with these events and attempt to analyse and deal with them properly without being emotionally manipulated, then maybe you need to step back or think about what it is that you want out of this stuff. Because we can't be emotional actors. Emotional politics is not effective politics. Not when you're planning anyway. Well, maybe in the heat of the moment when the demand to come arrives by some miracle. But I am not of the opinion that we can will prophecy into happening.
Well, the very simple question of why nothing ever happens is because there is no organised opposition currently to those in power. There is no organized minority who can direct events in their favor against those currently in power, and therefore nothing will ever happen. Because even the regime does have setbacks, like I said, all they need to do is survive. All they need to do is stay in power. And if they stay in power, they can continue to manufacture the future and they continue to print the history. Doesn't matter as long as they are able to maintain control within the political moment. All else can be retconned. And that is, unfortunately, the reality. And why you have this cycle of it's happening, and then just embarrassedly forgetting about it, you have to break it in the moment. But trying to break it in the moment just makes people angry with you. So really what you have to do is disengage from the cycle of it in general. And you have to believe that until there is, you know, an organized minority that you're aware of, until there is proper purposeful action that is able to build upon itself, not in any flashy public violence way, but in a very nuts and bolts organizational, how do we fill the gaps that are appearing in civil society way, nothing will be happening.
No.
There is more happening when there, you know, there'd be more happening if there were nativist food banks than if there were nativist riots. That's when you'll know something is actually happening, when the nuts and bolts of life start to change. Until the nuts and bolts of life start to change, until your actual, and still things start to happen in your actual everyday life that changes its trajectory irrevocably and changes how you live from the current paradigm, then nothing is happening. I mean, it seems a very simple thing to say, but things narratively happening in the media does not alter reality. The narrative doesn't shift reality. Reality does not move with hyper-reality. The two simply become further disconnected from each other in a miasma I simply describe as unreality.
Well, I think
the soup of compounding lies.
I think, to borrow a phrase that was at one point, I think, very well overused, one can ignore reality, but at some point one can no longer ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Yes.
And at some point, that will come home to roost. And people who have acted emotively over the internet, even though they may or may have not had good intentions around these events, might find themselves in a whole heap of trouble.
Thank you for the $2 there, TK. It simply says, Hemlo.
Bell Phosphorus Knight and Hulbert's 2016 paper reports that over 30-40% of the population has an internal monologue. I think it's probably even less, to be honest.
Yes. I think about that sometimes. As nothing ever happens, yes. What's your take on the...
had that one.
Oh, sorry, we've already got that one. Okay.
So, yeah, that's them all. I don't know if there's anything's come through the Ko-Fi at all.
Not currently, but we tend to get those in retrospect, actually. So thank you, people who donate while we're not streaming. You the real OGs.
But yes, it has been a little bit of a longer stream this evening because we've kind of sort of information dumped on this to a certain extent.
Yes.
But hopefully, I think this stands here, at least for the time being, as possibly one of the only coherent timelines and descriptions of what's happened in the last couple of weeks out there, and that other people hopefully take note of some of the stuff we pointed out here.
I mean, if I'm wrong and you can find all these people who are organising this nationwide protest movement, be my guest, but I can't find any of these people. And again, if the information you get is only coming from Tommy Robinson, social media, and mainstream sources, then there has to be a hidden hand somewhere. These, coincidental, the spontaneous theory of history has been destroyed by reality so many times. And as Bowden said there, and as he talked about, there is this inertia. There is this sense, really, that what we need to do is figure out who we are, figure out what we want before any of this really happens. And before there's an alteration really in the British soul, and they're able to use that to create, as we talk about a vanguard, and create an actual movement of people that is not mass but is directed and is able to wrestle with the huge, huge work there is to be done in Britain, we are never going to see anything happening.
But yes, if you've enjoyed the stream this evening, please, for the sake of making sure other people get to see it as well, interact with it and do the like
do
and tell us
like the video, tell and us how much comment and become a member and do all that good stuff.
Yes.
Please
and tell
please.
Us how much you love Israel and Al Gore's rhythms.
Yes, do illustrate your love of Al Gore's rhythms in the comments below.
And we shall probably be back maybe in a couple of weeks. We'll see what happens. Maybe nothing will continue to happen.
Yeah, we'll see if and nothing continues to happen. But anyway, we'll see you guys later. Have a good evening.
Bum to 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 bum